This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's D-Day in D.C., Denton Day with you on 106.7 The Fan, the Team 980, and the Odyssey app. You can hit me up on the Twitter machine at The Denton Day. We'll go right back out to the phones. Welcome in our guy Anthony Armstrong. Played here for a number of years in the late aughts, early 2010s. He's good enough to join us here now. Anthony, what's up, man? It's a pleasure to have you on, man. Been looking forward to doing this for a while now.
Yeah, Denton, what's going on? Thanks for having me. I mean, it's a beautiful day down here in Texas. I can't complain, but even better, I get to talk to y'all.
Yeah, man. So I got a lot of different things that I want to touch on with you, but I'll start with this. This has been kind of the overarching theme of the show today. I didn't think it's that big of a deal that Jayden Daniels at this point is splitting reps in camp. You're a guy that's been through a number of training camps. What did you think when Dan Quinn said that at least now he is splitting reps with Marcus Mariota?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it at all. The way that everything's been built with this team so far, we've sat back and trusted the way it's been handled. And I think that the way that they're trying to work Jayden into being the starter rather than just making him be the savior of the team, it's smart. You know, let him earn his reps. And there's something about that. Even as a player, you understand that you need to earn your reps. I know it's not the same, but I remember in college one time, I just wasn't having a good string of practices. I told my coach, hey, bump me down a little bit so I can earn my way back up. And this could be similar, but I think that we think Jayden's going to be the guy later on in the season, if not week one, but they're going to just slowly work that in.
So you obviously played a lot of years in the NFL. You played a lot of years here, and during that time frame, you played with a lot of different quarterbacks. From a wide receiver perspective, how beneficial is it to get reps with all of the guys that could potentially be throwing passes in the regular season now?
Man, it's one thing to get the reps with them, but ultimately we all want that consistency. You know, I don't think this is a quarterback competition per se. I just think that they just want, you know, Jayden to go through this process to where he will take all the majority of the reps with that one unit. But right now, getting that decision made soon is going to be very helpful so that you can get used to those person's reps. But as long as they're reading things the same and the offense is cooking, I think the receivers are going to be okay, but I would like them to get to know who they're going to work with and not have it be a surprise week one.
So what have you seen from this group of wide receivers? Obviously, we know Terry McLaurin and what he is capable of. Jahan has shown us glimpses. I know they seem to love Luke McCaffrey. When you look at this roster and the culmination of wide receivers, what stands out to you? Who excites you on this group?
You know, all the excitement comes with those unknown guys. You know, and I will say Jahan as well, simply because I expect him to have a huge bounce back season. Last year didn't go like anyone expected. And that second year, that sophomore slump, they say, I mean, people got tape on you. So now you have to take your game to the next level and find a way to, you know, up your game from there. So he's going to be up for that challenge. But you do got to get excited for Luke McCaffrey. I mean, they find ways to get the ball to his hands. His name just lets you know he's going to be a playmaker and a baller. So unique ways to get him exploited on the field is going to be something to look forward to. But some of those lesser-known guys, Jack Saint down there at the bottom, he made some great catches in OTAs. Like, what unknown guy is going to, you know, be the Anthony Armstrong of training camp? You know, who's going to make some noise and kind of work their way onto this roster? I saw Kaz Allen had a couple touchdowns in camp from Jayden as well. So who can build those days? That's what gets me excited, because there's going to be some unknown player that's going to make some noise.
You know, I've never been in NFL training camp. Obviously, you have. We're talking with Anthony Armstrong here on 106.7 The Fan. At what point does kind of like that first, almost first day of school excitement wear off, and now you're just locked in, you're working, and you're really getting into the dog days of camp?
Oh, you got to get those pads on first, right? Just being out there running around. Being out there running around is one thing, and I have to commend Dan Quinn for starting with the red zone. It's something I've never seen done, and it makes a lot of sense because you don't want to put a whole bunch of miles on players that may or may not have been working out to a certain level. There's a difference when you get out to training camp. The competition is there. Your reactions are going to be different. It's more than just running gassers or running routes. You actually have to start to react to things. So starting smart, but pads go on. That's when you start to know, okay, we are really in this thing. We're next to almost live. Maybe we're not tackling just yet, but those pads go on. That lets you know it's real. And the Groundhog Day, that starts to show up right before that first preseason game. So I know there's going to be some fireworks. I think what they get the Jets for that first preseason game, and they have the joint practices, there are going to be some fireworks, right? There are going to be some fights that ensue. But that's when you can let out that frustration. So they're a little bit away from that Groundhog Day, but I can't wait for that first day of pads.
Do you think, to an extent, fights are beneficial in training camp just to kind of release a little bit of the pressure that builds up throughout the course of this?
Man, I'm going to say no, because you don't want to necessarily condone that type of behavior, because every coach is going to say, on the field, when it's a key down, somebody can, you know, push you to that limit to where you want to start fighting, and it costs the team. That's not what we're looking to do. I want my guys to be composed. I want the competition to be high, right? I don't mind you jawing back and forth, but let's not throw fisticuffs. Somebody breaks a hand, now you're out for 6 weeks. It doesn't help the team. But having that competition, pushing each other, saying, hey, you make a play, I'm going to make a bigger play, pushing yourself that way is absolutely beneficial.
Anthony Armstrong with me here on 106.7 The Fan. You can find him on Twitter at Rated Armstrong. Give him a follow there. Does a great job with the Believe in Commanders podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. So, Anthony, you know, you talk about joint practices. I'm curious, from your days when you were playing, how normal were joint practices? It feels like they become much more normal and a much bigger deal now.
Yeah, I didn't do any joint practice. I say I'm fortunate because I didn't really like them. Simply, I think I did one maybe later on in my career when I was with Dallas. I think Oakland came to town. And those joint practices were, there's always some young rookie who is trying to make the team, and they are just a torpedo. And a lot of times people get hurt, but it is fun to release that tension and go against somebody else. Because when you're beating against the same drum, you're going against the same DBs every day. They know your moves. You know their moves. It starts to get boring. So the joint practices being there now, I think that the usage is smart, because you get to have some reps that aren't going to be out there live. You can lean on some coaches, you know, on the other side, say, hey, can I get a cover three look versus this particular play? And they'll do them that favor, right? I mean, it makes sense because everybody's out there trying to get better. And you get to get that extra tape of your guys competing that isn't in a game. Kind of controlled. So very beneficial. It's almost like you get an extra preseason game in because you get to go get some different looks.
What's your biggest question mark for the offense as we approach the new season?
And that would be my normal answer, but I'm going to change it to identity. Like, what is this identity going to look like? You have some capable running backs, B-Rob, Austin Eckler, but obviously Cliff Kingsbury is a wide-open spread out guy. Brian Johnson coming in, they ran the ball pretty well out of shotgun in Philly, so I think he's going to have some sort of influence. But you look at all the receivers, the tight ends, I think those. Just what type of identity is this team going to bring? And are we going to get some fireworks on the offensive side again?
I'm glad you brought up the running backs, because I look at them and that group on the roster and I say, this is a group that I think people are overlooking a little bit. You're a guy that played wide receiver, so obviously you're very familiar with pass game. And it felt like last year there was so much talk about balance and run-pass balance. For you, what is a good run-pass balance for an offense, especially with a young quarterback?
Good run-pass balance is where you have to stay ahead of the stick. That way you can stay balanced in your play call. And it's not necessarily 20 passes, 20 runs to me. Is the run effective? Is it gaining yards? Is it putting you in better position? Operating from 3rd and 10. Is not good if we're going to be running for 1 yard gain and losing yards and staying balanced by play call type. Being able to be balanced and mixing in run and play action and some quick game, things like that, to keep the other team off balance, essentially. So for me, balance has to do with effectiveness. I mean, every run's not going to break, but you got some talented running backs that can catch the ball out of the backfield. You know, is a swing pass to a running back, that's essentially a run play. Quick screen outside to Luke McCaffrey, Terry McLaurin, that's essentially a run play. So I take those things into account. I'm not just looking at, you know, passing attempts and running attempts.
And Anthony, I'll get you out of here on this. When you look at the defensive side, who do you trust the most to be able to get pressure on the quarterback this year? Because after they traded Chase and Montez last year, it became a real issue about getting pressure. Who do you look at on that defensive line and saying, this has got to be a big year for him if this team wants to be good?
And I'm going to point out Dorrance Armstrong coming up from Dallas, a wonderful last name. But the guy has worked his tail off to earn that contract, and he's comfortable with Dan Quinn, and Dan Quinn knows him. From hearing how Dan Quinn speaks, he's going to put players in position to do what they do best. And with having to pay attention to Deron Payne and John Allen still in the middle, you know, he's going to get some one-on-one opportunities. Teams are going to have to keep running backs inside to deal with those defensive tackles. They're going to chip from time to time, but I think Dorrance Armstrong could be a surprise. But overall, it's going to be a joint effort. I think you're going to get a lot of guys that are going to splash. Jamin Davis will make some noise, but I wouldn't be surprised if Dorrance Armstrong leads the way.
Sorry, I lied. One more question. Jamin Davis, he is a big question mark, and I think there's a lot of optimism potentially there. Do you think he can make that transition to being a guy that rushes the pass? Obviously, with Bobby Wagner now playing the middle linebacker spot, he's been awesome for a number of years. Do you think Jamin can make that transition and be effective getting pressure off the edge?
I think Jamin is at his best when he has one mission and can just play fast. And if you're going to work with him and get the team's leading sack getter and Ryan Kerrigan be a personal tutor to him, I could see him being successful in that. I mean, I'd rather have Jamin at 16, 17 high-quality reps trying to, you know, get after the passer than being out there 30 times or half of him. He's in coverage and he's not doing what he's also. He has the athletic ability. He's smart enough to do it. And if he's pointed and focused in one direction, he's got a coach staff behind him. He could be an X factor for the team. I'd see what he turns out this season.
Anthony, greatly appreciate the time on a Saturday, man. Really appreciate you giving us a couple of moments. I'm looking forward to what this season can become. We'll do this again soon, my friend.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
That is Anthony Armstrong, good enough to join us here on 106.7 The Fan this weekend. You can find him on Twitter at Rated Armstrong. Obviously, he played a number of years here in D.C., so great to get his perspective. I love what he said about getting that consistency with quarterbacks as a wide receiver. You know, I've always been so fascinated about some of the nuances when it comes to changing quarterbacks. And, you know, Anthony was not a Terry McLaurin as it relates to having like 8 quarterbacks in 3 years or whatever it was, 10 and 4. Anthony was here for 4 years, so 10 quarterbacks in 4 years. But that consistency is going to be important. And that kind of relates back to the point that I made in the beginning of the show as it pertains to Jaden Daniels. Right now, the panic at him splitting reps is a zero because it's the first week of camp. If we're into mid-August and he's still splitting reps, then I'm going to have a little bit of some, I'm going to have a question mark above my head. I'm going to be scratching my head. What is the point of this? Why are you consistently splitting reps? But doing it now in the first week where there's not a lot of pads, and I don't mind later in camp if Marcus Mariota is getting 10% of the reps with the ones, because that means Jaden Daniels is getting 90% of them. And your starting quarterback getting 90% of the reps, I'm pretty confident about that, especially in camp. Once the season starts, obviously, it'll be all Jaden. But if he's getting 90% of snaps in training camp and Mariota's getting 10 in August, I'm totally okay with that. I just don't need no 50-50s at that point. Once you get that first preseason game out of the way, gone are the days of 50-50 splits. I need my starting quarterback getting a majority, if not all, like I said, 90% I could live with, but if not all those reps, those have to be in favor of Jaden Daniels. All right, coming up, we're going to shift gears a little bit, talk about some defense. I'm going to encourage everybody to tread very, very carefully as it relates to one specific player. I'll tell you who that player is when we get back. It's D-Day in D.C. at The Denton Day on Twitter. We're back next with more on 106.7 The Fan of the Team 980.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's D-Day in D.C., Denton Day on 106.7 The Fan. We're simulcast on the Team 990. Big thanks to Anthony Armstrong, who just jumped on with us for about 10 to 15 minutes. We've got Cole Thompson on at the top of the hour. We'll go national with him. Big contracts dished out yesterday to Tua Tagovailoa and Jordan Love. But we're staying here in D.C. It's training camp. It's officially underway. We spent a lot of time talking about quarterbacks. I'm going to transition and talk a little bit about cornerback. You know, with Emmanuel Forbes, I'm treading cautiously this week. I've seen a number of tweets praising things that Emmanuel Forbes has done, and that's totally cool. I've seen a couple of stories praising Emmanuel Forbes. Dan Quinn has praised Emmanuel Forbes. There is a lot of positive things being said about Forbes. And I hope to God, when we get to like December, we look back at this time and say, I can't believe anybody thought that this was going to be a problem. I hope Emmanuel Forbes has absolutely outshined every bit of expectation that was placed on him, the positive, the negative, what have you. I hope we're sitting here in December saying, this is the number one corner for the team for years to come. With that said, I'm not confident there. You know, what I'm seeing this offseason is very similar to what I saw last offseason. I'm glad that Emmanuel Forbes has put on weight. That is awesome. He needed to put on weight. You need to get bigger in the NFL if you are going to be able to tackle some of the guys specifically. Like, just look around the division. Really not even. Look at one team. A.J. Brown is a freaking Terminator. I mean, that guy is a cyborg, android, whatever you want to call him. He is a massive individual. You know you got to play him twice a year. Didn't work well last year. That's not to say it can't work well in the future, but you need to get better. And Emmanuel Forbes putting on weight, at the very least, is a positive thing as it relates to when he sees A.J. Brown again. So that is a check mark. But I got to see him with pads on. You know, defending Terry McLaurin hard in drills is great. And we've seen a number of people report on that and see that happen at camp. That's great. But we need to see this on the field. I'm very cautious about falling into the trap again because I was right there last year. I fell into the trap of seeing the thing on YouTube, their Commander's Log series, and see Jack Del Rio nearly do a backflip when Ron Rivera sprinted into the room to tell him that they were taking Emmanuel Forbes. I had never seen Jack Del Rio smile, let alone smile that big. And I got optimistic. I allowed myself to drink that Kool-Aid a little bit, thinking that this was going to be the guy that now is this turnover machine. He's going to be everything that he was in college, a defense that has had such a big issue for years, forcing turnovers, forcing interceptions, that they finally got a guy to do that. And then what we saw last year was awful. Now, you can blame coaching for that. And anybody that would suggest anything else, they're like, if you're going to blame coaching and someone's going to say, actually, it wasn't the coaching, they're the moron here. Because last year, the coaching staff sucked. It was abysmal. The Jack Del Rio thing was awful towards the end. And thankfully, it ended before the actual season ended. That defense was an utter disaster. It was confusing. It felt like it was constricting. They had all these dudes and somehow played every single one of them out of position in the secondary. It was almost like he was trying to be bad as a defensive coordinator. All of that is totally accurate. So some of Emmanuel Forbes' shortcomings last year definitely were as a result of coaching. But that, to me, puts more pressure on him this year. Because what if it wasn't all of the shortcomings? What if it was largely based off of coaching, but some of the things that got people so excited in college just don't translate to the NFL? I've always viewed the act of being a ball hawk, outside of a few exceptions, but I've always viewed the act of being a ball hawk as very much a come and go kind of thing in the NFL. It's very similar in my eyes to pitching in Major League Baseball. There are going to be years where a guy is dialed in and he's going to finish the season 6 interceptions, 7 interceptions. Hell, maybe he gets higher than that. I'd love somebody to get 8 interceptions, 9 interceptions here. It feels like for the season, we're just itching to get over that number. Give me one guy that can do that, and I'll be doing cartwheels in the Beltway. But it feels like it's very similar to pitchers, because how many times do we see guys in Major League Baseball have just flamethrower seasons, and then the next year, they're getting tattooed all over the place? That's kind of what you have to do as a corner, because in a sense, if you are so great at forcing interceptions, what you were doing is fooling the quarterback. In making him think that you were out of position, he's going to throw the ball, and then, ha-ha, surprise, I'm in position, that ball's mine, interception, get the offense on the field. But that also leaves the opportunity to actually get beat. The best example of this, who played in the Joe Witt, Dan Quinn defense, is Trayvon Diggs. Trayvon Diggs had like 10 interceptions a couple of years ago. But if you rewatch some of those plays, he's getting burned. He's getting burned up. I mean, Terry McLaurin should have had 150 yards against this dude. He was just playing with a quarterback that couldn't throw. So, like, on one hand, you have a guy that can, he can force 10 interceptions. On the other hand, you have a guy in Trayvon Diggs that year who let up like 1,400 yards of offense because he's constantly getting burned, attempting to put himself in a spot where he's picking the ball off. It is very much a catch-22 as a cornerback. I'm hoping this year, I don't really care about the interception numbers. I'm hoping this year that Emmanuel Forbes plays the entire year. I mean, that's first and foremost. But I'm hoping he just is in phase. I'm hoping he's in phase all the time. I don't need big interception numbers. I just need you to not give up A.J. Brown kind of games. And what's fascinating about Forbes in particular is he is a Ron Rivera guy. He's not a Dan Quinn guy. I think he could fit into Dan Quinn defense, but he's not a Dan Quinn guy. Dan Quinn this week was asked about just cornerbacks in general, because if you look at this roster, there are not a lot of guys that you look at and say, this dude's going to be here for a long, long time. I like Benjamin St. Juste, but I got to be fair here and say, I don't know if this guy's going to be here for a long, long time. I like Emmanuel Forbes. Got to be fair here. I don't know if he's going to be here for a long, long time. So Dan Quinn was asked the other day about what he is looking for as it relates to cornerbacks, and this is what he said.
One, like vertical control, you know, when there's shots down the field, what takes place on those. We haven't had a lot of those because of our intentional work down in the red zone first. Then the ball skills, you know, how many times are they getting in the tough positions to get their hand on the football? And then when we get into the later piece, that'll be the tackling. But those three would be the markers that are constant, you know, separators.
There are elements of what Dan Quinn just said that I think match the frame as a player of Emmanuel Forbes. We just need to see it in action. We just need to see it in action. And that leads me to my question. And this is where I want you to chime in at 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. You can tweet at me as well. With Emmanuel Forbes in particular, what is the best case for him in the 2024 season? It can be numbers. It can be eye test. You can get as creative as you want. What is the best case for Emmanuel Forbes in 2024? Your calls at 800-636-1067. Next, I'll give you my answer. All that when we get back. Denton Day, D-Day in D.C. on 106.7 The Fan, the Team 980 in the Odyssey app. Denton Day on 106.7 The Fan, D-Day in D.C. We're taking your calls now at 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. Allowing you to be optimistic. In the year 2024, what's the best case scenario for Emmanuel Forbes with this team? And I'll give you my answer first. First and foremost, it starts with him starting all the games. That's very much in the realm of possibility here. Some of that is more positive because he can be a good player. The other is, well, look at the roster. It's not a lot of names on there that you think are starting caliber cornerbacks. So that's where we start. I think Emmanuel Forbes can start the entirety of the season this year for the Commanders. And then it gets into the interceptions, the turnovers, the pass deflections. He finished last year. Now, he had some injuries towards the end of the year, so he didn't get to play all the games. That's true. He finished last year with one interception. That number is going to be greater this year. If he starts in all the games, he is going to have more than one interception. Take that as a guarantee. He had 11 passes defended last year. That number is going to get higher. If for nothing else, teams are going to try him more. They're going to say, all right, this guy's struggling a little bit. We don't know what to expect of him. We're going to go his direction. We see him as a weakness. We're going to attack that weakness. It's up to Emmanuel Forbes to say, I'm not a weakness anymore. What you thought I was last year, that is not who I am now. So that number is going to get higher. I'm going to say he's going to be in the neighborhood of 12 to 13, maybe 15 passes defended. 11 was tied for 28th last year, so that's a good number. It's a decent number. I'm going to say he gets that number a little higher, though. And then it's the interceptions. Emmanuel Forbes is going to have, at the very least, three interceptions in 2024. He's going to triple the output that he had last year, again, because he's going to get tried more. Teams are going to throw at him more, and eventually the ball skills that he has, playing freely, which is what he has described this defense as in the early portions of training camp, that will take over. And this defensive staff is not going to be idiotic to the point where they're going to put him man-to-man for entire games against A.J. Brown. That's not going to happen.
I sure hope not.
I mean, if they learned anything from last year, this new coaching staff, just watch that game and say, we're not gonna do this. Can you imagine being live while that game was happening during the wonderful in-game show that Linnell and I host?
Yeah, I produced that show.
Yeah, it was brutal.
I produced that. That was not great.
Nothing fun about that. Some of the games are really fun. A lot of scoring. A lot of plays that get you excited as a fan, because we're fans too. That game was not. That game was not from the perspective of Emmanuel Forbes. Now, it was one of Sam Howell's best games, but it was not from the perspective of Emmanuel Forbes. So I played you a Dan Quinn cut. I want to play you one more. He was asked specifically about Emmanuel Forbes and how to make him more effective, and this is what Dan Quinn said.
Well, I think you want to hit the markers along the way, right, Dave? So, like, for him, you know, adding more size, and so to be, you know, 15 or 18 pounds heavier than he was a year ago, like, that's a big step in the right direction. So it's a matter of hitting all the spots to go. And so tackling that part of things, that's a big piece of it. But until you go through some of the games and that, you're not really able to demonstrate that, but you can show markers. My body feels different. I'm stronger. You know, those are things that lead up to that, but you still have to go do it.
Going and doing it is the big thing. It's like for a shooter in basketball. When you're on a slump and you see the first one go down, all of a sudden your confidence comes back just a little bit. And then the second one goes down. Like, oh, all right, hold on. We got something here. And then that third shot goes down, and all that negativity that you carried with you about slumping, that's out the window. You get three shots in a row, baby, I'm on fire. Give me the rock. I am firing this bad boy up. I'm heat checking everything. I ain't passing to nobody. I need Emmanuel Forbes to have that. I need him to make one play in the preseason, maybe in the joint practices. You can save the trash talk. You know, he was trash talking chirping the Ravens last year. I don't know if you need that. But I need that one play to come. And then all of a sudden, everything, that dark cloud that was over his head last year, gone. And this swagger, this young stud that was coming out of Mississippi State that Ron Rivera was so over the moon with. I just need Ron Rivera to get one right. And I need this coaching staff, who is far better, to take advantage of the one that Ron Rivera got right. Because, you know, it is funny. If you look at the roster, not a lot of Ron Rivera guys. There's a couple. Not a lot of Ron Rivera guys. I don't know if anybody has ever gone through that kind of streak over 40 years to have nobody get a second contract.
I mean, there's a massive overhaul of this team this offseason anyway. Like 25 free agents or something?
Like nearly 30.
Yeah.
Like nearly 30 guys. They're just bringing in everybody off of the street. I am still holding out some sort of belief that they're going to add another cornerback towards the end of training camp. There's one guy in particular just kind of out there hanging around, floating around, not signed right now, knows Dan Quinn well, knows Joe Witt Jr. very, very well. I think I'm still optimistic that maybe Stephon Gilmore ends up on this roster. That's just my optimistic hope. I have nothing. There's no reporting there. That is just taking one bit of information with another bit of information and doing some sort of mental math and saying, logically, it would make sense if Stephon Gilmore is on the team by the end of training camp if it doesn't work out with St. Juste, with Forbes, if they're to the point where they're trying to hit these barriers and these check marks and the coaching staff is just sitting there, forehead in their hands, saying, why is this not working? Why are they not hitting the checks that we wanted them to hit when we know we got a guy in Stephon Gilmore who's right there? The thing is, you just got to make sure that you sign him before anybody else does, because there's now rumors that he could potentially be headed elsewhere. But he's the one guy that I look at and say, if this doesn't work with Forbes, if it doesn't work with St. Juste, all these dudes that they signed, Noah I, Michael Davis, you name it. If it doesn't work with any of these dudes, you're going to get Stephon Gilmore. Because God love Mikey Sanders still, and I do. He's too small to play on the outside. You get A.J. Brown matchup one-on-one with Mikey Sanders still, you pray that his safety has coverage over the top. But if it's straight man-to-man, you're in trouble. Because A.J. Brown has like half a foot over the guy. Sanders still could be the biggest dog, best pound-for-pound football player in the world. He can't make up for the God-given, this dude is 6'4", and I'm 5'9". That equation does not work. But I'm keeping my eyes peeled on Stephon Gilmore to potentially land here if things don't go swimmingly, shall we say, during training camp. All right, top of the hour, Cole Thompson going to jump on with us. We'll talk a little bit about these quarterback contracts. Tua gets paid. Jordan Love gets paid. Alex Stroh from ESPN in Madison, Wisconsin, going to join us in about 30 minutes, 30, 45 minutes, give or take. He's going to talk about that Jordan Love contract. Coming up next, though, I think I found a new favorite Olympic sport. I got it on in the television in the studio right now. I'll tell you what it is next. It's Denton Day on 106.7 The Fan, Team 980 in the Odyssey app. It's D-Day in D.C., Denton Day on 106.7 The Fan. We're simulcast on the team at 980 and always on the free and live Odyssey app. You can hit me up on Twitter at The Denton Day. So this is the first like real day of Olympic competition. I know it starts technically before the ceremonies, but I only count what happens after the ceremony because you got to have the opening. And the ceremony itself, I mean, we'll touch on that in a second because hot damn, was that an experience? I don't know if it was a good experience, but it was something that we all went through together.
I loved it.
There were some metal. There were some definitely some things in there that I was like, "This is a heavy metal Chris thing."
Oh yeah, that's probably the biggest stage a metal band's ever been on in front of the world like that. It's pretty cool.
I mean, there was a Headless Queen to like start. I was like, "Damn, France!"
Yeah,
really?
Marie Antoinette. Yeah,
like, we're starting with this. I was like, "I don't know about that." There was some dude who was playing the piano on fire in the river. It was like, "How do you even get the fire out there?" You had the, I don't know if it was like the Fourth Horseman, the Angel of Death, Moon Knight on a horse. I don't know what it was, but it was like a mechanical horse. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on, and I was like in and out. Wasn't paying fully attention to it. It was a lot.
They had a whole segment with the Minions. Did you catch that from Despicable Me?
I missed that. I would have loved
like
to catch the Minions.
A whole animated segment with them with like the torch and stuff. They went everywhere with this thing.
After watching Moon Knight on a mechanical horse, I would have taken some Minions. You know, I would have been very much up for those little yellow things that kind of make me laugh a little bit. I'm a big fan of track and field. You know, ran track in high school, loved track. So obviously, I'm locked into the track and field stuff as it relates to the Olympics. But the best part of the Olympics are the sports that I never watch, and then I'm now all of a sudden locked in on. And a perfect example of that is literally right now. I got a television on in the studio here, and I just finished watching the France and Brazil basketball game. And rugby popped on after. Like rugby, I could watch rugby. You know, got Old Glory in D.C., so I could watch them. If I'm going to watch some Olympics, I'm going to watch some other stuff. So I flipped on canoeing. I didn't know that canoeing was an Olympic sport. So because I did not know canoeing was an Olympic sport, I had zero idea what I was going to expect when I turned this on. Had no idea. I've been in a canoe before. Are you a canoe guy, Chris?
No. No.
You don't strike me as a canoe guy.
I'll watch this stuff, but I am not someone that, no.
I went to a summer camp years ago in Madison, Virginia. Camp Varsity was a wonderful place. We had some canoes. I learned what it's like to flip a canoe because I flipped a canoe, and then I had to learn what it was like to unflip a canoe, which was a less fun process. So I had like a mental picture of what a canoe is, and then I turned this on. This is not what I grew up as a canoe. This is like
these are like kayaks.
This is like a, not just a kayak. These dudes are like suction cupped into this thing. I mean, I am stunned. It's like white water rafting in a kayak where there are things that I can only describe as...
Well, they're gates like a slalom.
Like a slalom.
Yeah.
If you're a football fan, it's like an inverted goalpost because they're hanging from the ceiling. Not the ceiling, but they're hanging from above. And there are instances where you have to kind of slide through. If you are older, think crochet, but just all the pegs off of the ground, and they're just kind of hanging. And I believe the objective is to get through every single gate as quickly as possible without touching any single gate.
Because it's all going downhill like you're in a river. But the thing that I don't think you notice, or you know, because I've seen this before, some of the gates you have to go through uphill. You cannot go through them all downhill. Some of them require you to go the uphill direction, like counter the flow of the river.
This whole sport is fascinating.
Yeah, that takes some upper body strength.
insane upper body strength, insane core strength. Oh, I had a buddy just text me. He said, you got to go through the red ones in reverse. Who came up with that? You know, my favorite element that I'm missing right now because I'm on radio and I can't have sound is the play-by-play of this.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Denton Day on 106.7 The Fan, D-Day in D.C. We're taking your calls now at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067, allowing you to be optimistic. In the year 2024, what's the best case scenario for Emmanuel Forbes with this team? And I'll give you my answer first. First and foremost, it starts with him starting all the games. That's very much in the realm of possibility here. Some of that is more positive because he can be a good player. The other is, well, look at the roster. It's not a lot of names on there that you think are starting caliber cornerbacks. So that's where we start. I think Emmanuel Forbes can start the entirety of the season this year for the Commanders. And then it gets into the interceptions. The turnovers, the pass deflections. He finished last year. Now, he had some injuries towards the end of the year, so he didn't get to play all the games. That's true. He finished last year with one interception. That number is going to be greater this year. If he starts in all the games, he is going to have more than one interception. Take that as a guarantee. He had 11 passes defended last year. That number is going to get higher. If for nothing else, teams are going to try him more. They're going to say, all right, this guy's struggling a little bit. We don't know what to expect of him. We're going to go his direction. We see him as a weakness. We're going to attack that weakness. It's up to Emmanuel Forbes to say, I'm not a weakness anymore. What you thought I was last year, that is not who I am now. So that number is going to get higher. I'm going to say he's going to be in the neighborhood of 12 to 13 maybe 15 passes defended. 11 was tied for 28th last year, so that's a good number. It's a decent number. I'm going to say he gets that number a little higher, though. And then it's the interceptions. Emmanuel Forbes is going to have, at the very least, 3 interceptions in 2024. He's going to triple the output that he had last year, again, because he's going to get tried more. Teams are going to throw at him more, and eventually the ball skills that he has, playing freely, which is what he has described this defense as in the early portions of training camp, that will take over. And this defensive staff is not going to be idiotic to the point where they're going to put him man-to-man for entire games against A.J. Brown. That's not going to happen.
I sure hope not.
I mean, if they learned anything from last year, this new coaching staff, just watch that game and say, we're not gonna do this. Can you imagine being live while that game was happening during the wonderful in-game show that Linnell and I host?
Yeah, I produced that show.
Yeah, it was brutal.
I produced that. That was not great.
Nothing fun about that. Some of the games are really fun. A lot of scoring. A lot of plays that get you excited as a fan, because we're fans too. That game was not. That game was not from the perspective of Emmanuel Forbes. Now, it was one of Sam Howell's best games, but it was not from the perspective of Emmanuel Forbes. So I played you a Dan Quinn cut. I want to play you one more. He was asked specifically about Emmanuel Forbes and how to make him more effective, and this is what Dan Quinn said.
I think you want to hit the markers along the way, right, Dave? So, like, for him, you know, adding more size, and so to be, you know, 15 or 18 pounds heavier than he was a year ago, like, that's a big step in the right direction. So it's a matter of hitting all the spots to go. And so tackling that part of things, that's a big piece of it. But until you go through some of the games and that, you're not really able to demonstrate that, but you can show markers. My body feels different. I'm stronger. You know, those are things that lead up to that, but you still have to go do it.
Going and doing it is the big thing. It's like for a shooter in basketball. When you're on a slump and you see the first one go down, all of a sudden your confidence comes back just a little bit. And then the second one goes down. Like, oh, all right, hold on. We got something here. And then that third shot goes down, and all that negativity that you carried with you about slumping, that's out the window. You get 3 shots in a row, baby, I'm on fire. Give me the rock. I am firing this bad boy up. I'm heat checking everything. I ain't passing to nobody. I need Emmanuel Forbes to have that. I need him to make one play in the preseason, maybe in the joint practices. You can save the trash talk. You know, he was trash talking, chirping the Ravens last year. I don't know if you need that. But I need that one play to come. And then all of a sudden, everything, that dark cloud that was over his head last year, gone. And this swagger, this young stud that was coming out of Mississippi State that Ron Rivera was so over the moon with. I just need Ron Rivera to get one right. And I need this coaching staff, who is far better, to take advantage of the one that Ron Rivera got right. Because, you know, it is funny. If you look at the roster, not a lot of Ron Rivera guys. There's a couple. Not a lot of Ron Rivera guys. I don't know if anybody has ever gone through that kind of streak over 4 years to have nobody get a second contract.
I mean, there's a massive overhaul of this team this offseason anyway. Like 25 free agents or something?
Like nearly 30.
Yeah.
Like nearly 30 guys. They're just bringing in everybody off of the street. I am still holding out some sort of belief that they're going to add another cornerback towards the end of training camp. There's one guy in particular just kind of out there hanging around, floating around, not signed right now, knows Dan Quinn well, knows Joe Witt Jr. very, very well. I think I'm still optimistic that maybe Stephon Gilmore ends up on this roster. That's just my optimistic hope. I have nothing. There's no reporting there. That is just taking one bit of information with another bit of information and doing some sort of mental math and saying, logically, it would make sense if Stephon Gilmore is on the team by the end of training camp. If it doesn't work out with St. Juste, with Forbes, if they're to the point where they're trying to hit these barriers and these check marks, and the coaching staff is just sitting there forehead in their hands saying, why is this not working? Why are they not hitting the checks that we wanted them to hit when we know we got a guy in Stephon Gilmore who's right there? The thing is, you just got to make sure that you sign him before anybody else does, because there's now rumors that he could potentially be headed elsewhere. But he's the one guy that I look at and say, if this doesn't work with Forbes, if it doesn't work with St. Juice, all these dudes that they signed, Noah I, Michael Davis, you name it. If it doesn't work with any of these dudes, you're going to get Stephon Gilmore. Because God love Mikey Sander still, and I do. He's too small to play on the outside. You get A.J. Brown matchup one-on-one with Mikey Sander still, you pray that his safety has coverage over the top. But if it's straight man-to-man, you're in trouble. Because A.J. Brown has like half a foot over the guy. Sander still could be the biggest dog, best pound-for-pound football player in the world. He can't make up for the God-given, this dude is 6'4", and I'm 5'9". That equation does not work. But I'm keeping my eyes peeled on Stephon Gilmore to potentially land here if things don't go swimmingly, shall we say, during training camp. All right, top of the hour, Cole Thompson going to jump on with us. We'll talk a little bit about these quarterback contracts. Tua gets paid. Jordan Love gets paid. Alex Stroh from ESPN in Madison, Wisconsin, going to join us in about 30 minutes, 30, 45 minutes, give or take. He's going to talk about that Jordan Love contract. Coming up next, though, I think I found a new favorite Olympic sport. I got it on in the television in the studio right now. I'll tell you what it is next. It's Denton Day on 106.7 The Fan, the Team 980 in the Odyssey app. It's D-Day in D.C., Denton Day on 106.7 The Fan. We're simulcast on the Team at 980 and always on the free and live Odyssey app. You can hit me up on Twitter at The Denton Day. So this is the first like real day of Olympic competition. I know it starts technically before the ceremonies, but I only count what happens after the ceremony because you got to have the opening. And the ceremony itself, I mean, we'll touch on that in a second because hot damn, was that an experience? I don't know if it was a good experience, but it was something that we all went through together.
I loved it.
There were some metal. There were some definitely some things in there that I was like, "This is a heavy metal Chris thing."
Oh yeah, that's probably the biggest stage a metal band's ever been on in front of the world like that. It's pretty cool.
I mean, there was a Headless Queen to like start. I was like, "Damn, France!"
Yeah,
really?
Marie Antoinette. Yeah,
like, we're starting with this. I was like, "I don't know about that." There was some dude who was playing the piano on fire in the river. I was like, "How do you even get the fire out there?" You had the, I don't know if it was like the Fourth Horseman, the Angel of Death, Moon Knight on a horse. I don't know what it was, but it was like a mechanical horse. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on, and I was like in and out. Wasn't paying fully attention to it. It was a lot.
They had a whole segment with the Minions. Did you catch that from Despicable Me?
I missed that. I would have loved to catch the Minions.
They had like a whole animated segment with them with like the torch and stuff. They went everywhere with this thing.
After watching Moon Knight on a mechanical horse, I would have taken some Minions. You know, I would have been very much up for those little yellow things that kind of make me laugh a little bit. I'm a big fan of track and field. You know, ran track in high school. Loved track. So obviously, I'm locked into the track and field stuff as it relates to the Olympics. But the best part of the Olympics are the sports that I never watch, and then I'm now all of a sudden locked in on. And a perfect example of that is literally right now. I got a television on in the studio here, and I just finished watching the France and Brazil basketball game. And rugby popped on after. Like rugby, I could watch rugby. You know, got Old Glory in D.C., so I could watch them. If I'm going to watch some Olympics, I'm going to watch some other stuff. So I flipped on canoeing. I didn't know that canoeing was an Olympic sport. So because I did not know canoeing was an Olympic sport, I had zero idea what I was going to expect when I turned this on. Had no idea. I've been in a canoe before. Are you a canoe guy, Chris?
No. No.
You don't strike me as a canoe guy.
I'll watch this stuff, but I am not someone that, no.
I went to a summer camp years ago in Madison, Virginia. Camp Varsity was a wonderful place. We had some canoes. I learned what it's like to flip a canoe because I flipped a canoe, and then I had to learn what it was like to unflip a canoe, which was a less fun process. So I had like a mental picture of what a canoe is, and then I turned this on. This is not what I grew up as a canoe. This is like
these are like kayaks.
This is like a not just a kayak. These dudes are like suction cupped into this thing. I mean, I am stunned. It's like white whitewater rafting in a kayak where there are things that I can only describe as...
Well, they're gates like a slalom.
Like a slalom.
Yeah.
If you're a football fan, it's like an inverted goalpost because they're hanging from the ceiling. Not the ceiling, but they're hanging from above. And there are instances where you have to kind of slide through. If you are older, think crochet, but just all the pegs off of the ground, and they're just kind of hanging. And I believe the objective is to get through every single gate as quickly as possible without touching any single gate.
Because it's all going downhill like you're in a river. But the thing that I don't think you notice, or you know, because I've seen this before, some of the gates you have to go through uphill. You cannot go through them all downhill. Some of them require you to go the uphill direction, like counter the flow of the river.
This whole sport is fascinating.
Yeah. That takes some upper body strength.
insane upper body strength, insane core strength. Oh, I had a buddy just text me. He said, you got to go through the red ones in reverse. Who came up with that? You know, my favorite element that I'm missing right now because I'm on radio and I can't have sound is the play-by-play of this. Because, like, knowing how the business works, everybody that you love that does play-by-play for football really had to cut their teeth doing play-by-play at lower levels to then work their way up to being the guy that can do Monday Night Football, CBS, Fox, ESPN. Like, you get it, right? You had to cut your teeth. So they're either throwing somebody into the fire that has never done this sport before, or you got to find somebody that is regularly commentating on canoeing to then be the commentators for this sport. I'm intrigued with how often there are canoeing competitions.
You could find like a former athlete or an old coach of a team or something like that. That would work too. You don't necessarily have to be like a pro announcer.
For the color commentary.
Yeah.
But for the play-by-play, like, I got to understand, for me who has never done this, like, I don't know what's going on. I'm literally just in this because I think it looks funny and it looks like a lot of fun. I had no idea that the red ones you had to go through in were reverse. You got to go through the gates. I saw one dude doing the limbo. This is what the Olympics are about.
Yeah.
It's about those of us that spend way too much time with the football and the basketball and the baseball, flipping on a television at 1:53 p.m. on a Saturday to see a bunch of dudes who I can't see the legs of, I can't see the feet of, that are like suction cupped into a kayak that they're calling canoeing. It's not a canoe. It looks like a kayak. Just racing through things. By the way, swimming update. Katie Ledecky is going to go for a medal today. You want to talk about getting out of the gates quick.
Yep.
The 400 meter, I think it's the freestyle swim today, basically right as we end our show. So in an hour from now.
I believe freestyle is one of her better position?
It's one of her better events,
styles?
But she's going up against a female, a girl that is right there with her. She's an Australian.
Yep. She's beat Ledecky before in competition.
She has.
Yep.
She was like the first one that we ever saw beat Katie Ledecky. I believe her name is pronounced Ariane Titmus, whatever it is. Obviously, I'm rooting for Katie Ledecky. I don't care about the Australian.
Sure.
But they're going to square off. That starts at 2:52 p.m. today. I believe that's going to be on Big NBC. It should be on Big NBC because swimming is one of those events that always feels like it's on Big NBC. I'm excited for
that. Ledecky's one of the biggest names for America in the Olympics. They'll have it on the big one, I'm pretty sure.
They bet. I mean, she is.
She's just such a big name alone.
When you talk about superstars for the Olympics.
They're not putting Simone Biles on CNBC. You know, they're not putting Katie Ledecky on E, right?
On E, like, Network.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you know, let's put her on right after Real Housewives of Atlanta. You get a little bit of swimming after that one. No, so yeah, she'll be on Big NBC. I'm excited for that one. You know, Ledecky has been crushing, so getting real competition in the Olympics is going to be a whole lot of excitement. And then watching her stomp all over the Australian is going to be a whole lot of excitement as well because we're rooting for Katie Ledecky. By the time we get back from break, I will find the odds to this 400-meter free swim because, you know, your boy is a gambler. But also when we get back, we're going to talk with Cole Thompson. He's based out of Houston, so he's just at Houston Texans training camp today. But we're going to go national with him. Tua Tagovailoa gets a huge contract. Jordan Love gets a huge contract. What does that mean for Dak Prescott? All those questions answered. Plus, you'll get your line on Katie Ledecky in the 400-meter freestyle when we get back here. It's Denton Day on 106.7 The Fan. You can hit me up on Twitter at The Denton Day. We're back with more next. It's D-Day in D.C. Denton Day on 106.7 The Fan. We're simulcast on the team at 980 and always on the free and live Odyssey app. You can hit me up on Twitter at The Denton Day. So this is the first, like, real day of Olympic competition. I know it starts technically before the ceremonies, but I only count what happens after the ceremony because you got to have the opening. And the ceremony itself, I mean, we'll touch on that in a second because hot damn, was that an experience. I don't know if it was a good experience, but it was something that we all went through together.
I loved it.
There were some metal, there were some definitely some things in there that I was like, this is a heavy metal Chris thing.
Oh, yeah. That's probably the biggest stage a metal band's ever been on in front of the world like that. It's pretty cool.
I mean, there was a Headless Queen to like start. I was like, damn, France.
Yeah,
really?
Marie Antoinette. Yeah.
Like, we're starting with this. I was like, I don't know about that. There was some dude who was playing the piano on fire in the river. I was like, how do you even get the fire out there? I don't know if it was like the Fourth Horseman, the Angel of Death, Moon Knight on a horse. I don't know what it was, but it was like a mechanical horse. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on. And I was like in and out, wasn't paying fully attention to it. It was a lot.
They had a whole segment with the Minions. Did you catch that from Despicable Me?
I missed that. I would have loved to catch the Minions.
They had like a whole animated segment with them with like the torch and stuff. They went everywhere with this thing.
After watching Moon Knight on a mechanical horse, I would have taken some Minions. You know, I would have been very much up for those little yellow things that kind of make me laugh a little bit. I'm a big fan of track and field. You know, ran track in high school, loved track. So obviously, I'm locked into the track and field stuff as it relates to the Olympics. But the best part of the Olympics are the sports that I never watch, and then I'm now all of a sudden locked in on. And a perfect example of that is literally right now. I got a television on in the studio here, and I just finished watching the France and Brazil basketball game. And rugby popped on after. Like rugby, I could watch rugby, you know, got Old Glory in D.C., so I could watch them. If I'm going to watch some Olympics, I'm going to watch some other stuff. So I flipped on canoeing. I didn't know that canoeing was an Olympic sport. So because I did not know canoeing was an Olympic sport, I had zero idea what I was going to expect when I turned this on. Had no idea. I've been in a canoe before. Are you a canoe guy, Chris?
No. No.
You don't strike me as a canoe guy.
I'll watch this stuff, but I am not someone that, no.
I went to a summer camp years ago in Madison, Virginia. Camp Varsity was a wonderful place. We had some canoes. I learned what it's like to flip a canoe because I flipped a canoe, and then I had to learn what it was like to unflip a canoe, which was a less fun process. So I had like a mental picture of what a canoe is, and then I turned this on. This is not what I grew up as a canoe. This is like
these are like kayaks.
This is like a not just a kayak. These dudes are like suction cupped into this thing. I mean, I am stunned. It's like white water rafting in a kayak where there are things that I can only describe as.
Well, they're gates like a slalom.
Like a slalom.
Yeah.
If you're a football fan, it's like an inverted goalpost because they're hanging from the ceiling. Not the ceiling, but they're hanging from above. And there are instances where you have to kind of slide through. If you are older, think crochet, but just all the pegs off of the ground. And they're just kind of hanging. And I believe the objective is to get through every single gate as quickly as possible without touching any single gate.
Because it's all going downhill like you're in a river. But the thing that I don't think you notice, or you know, because I've seen this before, some of the gates you have to go through uphill. You cannot go through them all downhill. Some of them require you to go the uphill direction, like counter the flow of the river.
This whole sport is fascinating.
Yeah, that takes some upper body strength.
insane upper body strength, insane core strength. Oh, I had a buddy just text me. He said, you got to go through the red ones in reverse. Who came up with that? You know, my favorite element that I'm missing right now because I'm on radio and I can't have sound is the play-by-play of this. Because, like, knowing how the business works, everybody that you love that does play-by-play for football really had to cut their teeth doing play-by-play at lower levels to then work their way up to being the guy that can do Monday Night Football, CBS, Fox, ESPN. Like, you get it, right? You had to cut your teeth. So they're either throwing somebody into the fire that has never done the sport before, or you got to find somebody that is regularly commentating on canoeing to then be the commentators for this sport. I'm intrigued with how often there are canoeing competitions.
You could find like a former athlete or an old coach of a team or something like that. That would work too. You don't necessarily have to be like a pro announcer.
For the color commentary.
Yeah.
But for the play-by-play, like, I got to understand, for me who has never done this, like, I don't know what's going on. I'm literally just in this because I think it looks funny and it looks like a lot of fun. I had no idea that the red ones you had to go through in were reverse. You got to go through the gates. I saw one dude doing the limbo. This is what the Olympics are about.
Yeah.
It's about those of us that spend way too much time with the football and the basketball and the baseball flipping on a television at 1:53 p.m. on a Saturday to see a bunch of dudes who I can't see the legs of, I can't see the feet of, that are like suction cupped into a kayak that they're calling canoeing. It's not a canoe. It looks like a kayak. Just racing through things. By the way, swimming update. Katie Ledecky is going to go for a medal today. You want to talk about getting out of the gates quick.
Yep.
The 400 meter, I think it's the freestyle swim today, basically right as we end our show. So in an hour from now.
I believe freestyle is one of her better position?
It's one of her better events, but she's going up against a female, a girl that is right there with her. She's an Australian.
Yep. She's beat Ledecky before in competition.
She has.
Yep.
She was like the first one that we ever saw beat Katie Ledecky. I believe her name is pronounced Ariane Titmus, whatever it is. Obviously, I'm rooting for Katie Ledecky. I don't care about the Australian.
Sure.
But they're going to square off. That starts at 2:52 p.m. today. I believe that's going to be on Big NBC. It should be on Big NBC because swimming is one of those events that always feels like it's on Big NBC. I'm excited for
that. Ledecky's one of the biggest names for America in the Olympics. They'll have it on the big one, I'm pretty sure.
They bet. I mean, she is.
She's just such a big name alone.
When you talk about superstars for the Olympics,
they're not putting Simone Biles on CNBC. You know, they're not putting Katie Ledecky on E, right?
On E, like, Network.
Yeah.
Let's put her on right after Real Housewives of Atlanta. You get a little bit of swimming after that one. No, so yeah, she'll be on Big NBC. I'm excited for that one. You know, Ledecky has been crushing, so getting real competition in the Olympics is going to be a whole lot of excitement. And then watching her stomp all over the Australian is going to be a whole lot of excitement as well, because we're rooting for Katie Ledecky. By the time we get back from break, I will find the odds to this 400-meter free swim because, your boy's a gambler. But also when we get back, we're going to talk with Cole Thompson. He's based out of Houston, so he's just at Houston Texans training camp today. But we're going to go national with him. Tua Tagovailoa gets a huge contract. Jordan Love gets a huge contract. What does that mean for Dak Prescott? All those questions answered. Plus, you'll get your line on Katie Ledecky in the 400-meter freestyle when we get back here. It's Denton Day on 106.7 The Fan. You can hit me up on Twitter at The Denton Day. We're back with more next.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.